Here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us on the line former Representative Charles Key. He was in the state legislature there in Oklahoma back at the time of the Oklahoma City bombing, and really risked his career to try to get the truth out to the American people that we were not being told the truth, that there were far more to the bombing than we were told. There were other people involved, and that information was being covered up by the government. And believe me, they went out to make his life miserable, didn't they, Charles?
Oh, goodness, yes.
Well, anyway, of course, you are still in there. For a time, you weren't active, and now you're just trying to get people to remember because I think if we'd gotten the truth back there in 1995, we would not have had the 9-1-1 bombing. Wasn't there some sort of a connection between what happened at the Murrah Building and some of these people from the Iraqi National Guard?
Yes, and that's story that so many people don't know across the country, and that is that the official government story, meaning one bomber, Tim McVeigh, pulling a truck up in front of the building, was responsible for the Oklahoma City bombing all by himself. That's almost completely false. The only truth about it is that McVeigh was involved in it, and apparently there was a Ryder truck. But in addition to that, he had other people right there on the ground with him, in the truck and in the surrounding area in front of the building, and further helping him carry out that terrible crime. And many of those people were former Iraqi soldiers who had been allowed into this country after our first battle with Saddam Hussein back in the early 90s. Several thousands of former Iraqi soldiers were allowed and given asylum in this country. And at least one of those individuals has been specifically identified by name as being the John Doe that was in the Ryder truck with Timothy McVeigh.
And, of course, the government knows this. But why would they cover that up? This is the most incredible thing to me. Why would they cover up? In fact, that certainly could have been justification for our attack on Saddam Hussein. Why didn't they tell the American people the truth at that time? And why are they still concealing the truth from the American people?
Well, you know, we have to go back and put everything in proper context. The Clinton administration was in office at the time. I think they had two very good reasons to do this, and one of them was that they didn't want to disrupt Middle East peace talks that were going on. He didn't want to have to do what would be necessary if it was revealed that there were foreign nationals that were involved in a terrorist attack on American soil, which that would mean a very strong military response to someone, probably Iraq. And I think also domestic politics came into play, and the Clinton administration realized this was an opportunity to silence some of his domestic enemies on the right wing of the political spectrum.
All right, well, certainly that is a very plausible explanation. But then, of course, we've got the strange goings-on at Elohim City and Andreas Strassmeyer and that crowd over there that seemed to be being protected by the government. In fact, when the BATF wanted to raid Elohim City, why the Justice Department intervened. And when we get back, of course, we're going to explore all of these ideas with Representative Charles Key, because if you don't understand the past, you can't understand the present, and you certainly can't anticipate the future. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. Our guest this afternoon is former Representative Charles Key, who was in the legislature there in the state of Oklahoma at the time of the Oklahoma City bombing, and he took it upon himself to try to get the truth out, and of course came under tremendous pressure to silence him, because the last thing the people in Washington, D.C. wanted was for the American people to learn the truth about what really happened there. And certainly, as Representative Key was pointing out just a moment ago, why there is no question at all that there were members of some sort of an Iraqi cell. There were people from the Iraqi National Guard, Republican Guard, who had been brought to this country, and certainly John Doe 1 has been identified, and he even brought suit against the person who identified them and lost the lawsuit. The judge held that all the evidence showed that he was in the cab there with Timothy McVeigh when they pulled up in front of the Murrah Building, but not a word of that got out in the controlled medium. And then, of course, the question comes up as to why the government would suppress this. What a convenient thing for George Bush to bring out, saying we had to get wicked Saddam Hussein because he was it was Iraqis who were behind the bombing of the Murrah Building back in April of 1995. And then, of course, Charles says that there were political reasons why nothing was brought out at that time. Bill Clinton certainly didn't want to have to take any action at that time. But then, of course, we get over into the story of Elohim City, which is a totally a different story, but it's a parallel story. And here we find all sorts of government agents working, in this Christian identity camp, a radical revolutionary camp. And yet most of the key players that were advocating revolution and violence were working for one or another government agency or affiliated with them. Would you like to tell our listeners about Elohim City and how that all fits in?
Well, one thing I'd like to say first to kind of preface all the things we're discussing here, you and I have talked before many times, and my theory, my number one theory of my two theories of what really happened in the Oklahoma City case, is that there were actually two plans or two operations that were going on simultaneously.
You mean, were these government operations, or were they, what sort of operations were they?
Well, I think there were individuals, like we were talking about earlier, that were surveilling individuals that were on the right, like at Elohim City, the Christian identity types, militias, as they're referred to, Aryan Nations, folks like that. And then I think there were others that well, we mentioned Andy Strassmeyer earlier, the West German that was here.
Hold that thought right now. We're going to bring our other stations back with us in just a moment here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Charles was saying that basically it is his belief that there were two things going on. There were two separate things that were happening at the same time. One was there was a surveillance of the so-called radical right or militia movement that would seem to be organized there at the at the Elohim City, and one of the people involved was Andy Strassmeyer. Pick up the story.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is that as we've unraveled this case, there seems pretty clear that there was a sting operation that was in play, and it got out of hand, and it figuratively and literally blew up in the government's face. But the other problem is that there were some real good reasons why they would go ahead and pursue others involved and do the job typically that you would expect law enforcement to do, but they didn't do that. And then yet the question is, how did it blow up in their face? How did it get out of their control? And that's where my theory and others believe that there were people, there were entities, some in our government or connected to our government in some way, that helped cause this thing to get out of control of those that were actually trying to do their job within our government, within the FBI and ATF and elsewhere. And for example, you ask about Elohim City. Elohim City is a community in eastern Oklahoma right close to the Arkansas border, in which there are a lot of people there that are of the persuasion called Christian identity. And there are some people there that say they don't advocate any kind of violence or anything like that. On the other hand, we know that that community and has been frequented by people that do have a very radical and violent belief system and against the United States government.
And yet, of course, the man who headed it was a government informant, Reverend Millard. Why would the government set up a camp, to attract all of these people who are anti-government?
Yeah, and the more we looked into this, as you've looked into so many things, you find out these informants sprinkled all over the place, and oftentimes they're the ones, like in the case of Andy Strassmeyer, who no question was a government informant, agent, a provocateur of some type. Oftentimes those folks are the ones that are inciting the others to take more radical and extreme measures, violence against private citizens and the government. And that's what we found in the Oklahoma City case with Andy Strassmeyer.
And so what you're saying is that the government employs people to incite violence, and Strassmeyer, Millar, certainly others that were there, were all advocating violence against the government, and yet they were working for the government. That doesn't make sense unless they really wanted to incite violence.
Well, here we have Andy Strassmeyer, who was an officer in the German Army. His father was a high-level politician in Helmut Kohl's administration in Germany. Other family members high in the German government or in other cultural institutions. And here he comes to the United States, tries to get a job with the DEA, claims he was denied a job with them, and then says that he just decided to roam around the United States because he's such a big Civil War buff. Finally, makes his way to Elohim City after going and hanging out in a lot of organizations and groups like that around the United States, around mostly in the South. Makes his way to Elohim City. Well, we also know prior to 95, in the early 90s, well documented that the German government had been having meetings with our government, particularly the FBI, Louis Freeh, and others, about these so-called neo-Nazis that travel from the United States back and forth to Germany. And the German government had been telling the American government, primarily the FBI, that they wish they'd do something about these guys. And this is all in public documents. You can find this information. Louis Freeh one time essentially said, he goes, well, look, we've got a constitution in this country. We can't just go pick these people up and put them in jail like you can do over in Germany. Well, that all preceded Strassmeyer coming to the United States, and then we have Strassmeyer becoming pretty good friends with Tim McVeigh at minimum.
And of course, Strassmeyer was pretending to be a neo-Nazi, but he really wasn't. He was an intelligence agent.
Sure, and then you had the ATF not knowing, the ATF office in Tulsa, Oklahoma, because they had a legitimate informant who infiltrated various groups, including Elohim City, this gal named Carol Howe. She had informed on Strassmeyer and others to the ATF there in Tulsa that he was inciting those people to, quote, take their war against the government to a higher level and start assassinating politicians, creating mass shootings in public, and blowing up government buildings.
And didn't even mention the Murrah Building?
Well, in that report, that's what was said. In other reports that she gave, yes, he mentioned the Murrah Building, and she did. And she was from Tulsa. She wasn't familiar with the Murrah Building, not being in Oklahoma City, but she thought it was called the Murray Building.
Right.
So then you have Strassmeyer, you have Carol Howe informing on the ATF. Well, they began to put together a sting operation against Elohim City, with Strassmeyer being the target because of those things he said, and also because they learned that his visa had expired and he was illegal because of that, and he was in possession of firearms, and that was at least two violations of federal law right there. So they were going to go into Elohim City, and this was in early March. They were preparing to do that when the ATF agent, Angela Finley Graham, discovered that through an Oklahoma Highway Patrolman that the FBI also had an informant in Elohim City. We're not sure what the name of that informant was. It could have been Millar, could have been Strassmeyer, could have been yet a third person that we believe was also an informant that frequented Elohim City. But in any event, she finds out the FBI has this informant while she's preparing the sting operation. She immediately goes to her supervisor and said, did you know the FBI had an informant there also? He said, no. He probably had some choice words like blankety blank blank no. And he said, all of this is in government documents that you've seen and we've produced in our final report. He says we must immediately go to the U.S. Attorney for this district, Steve Lewis, who I used to serve with in the Oklahoma House of Representatives. And they have this meeting with him. And then the next meeting they have immediately is with the head of the FBI. His name slipped my mind for a minute.
All right, don't worry about it. Yes.
The head of the FBI operation in Waco. And that's when they had this meeting with the FBI, and the FBI calls off the ATF's sting operation of Elohim City about 6 weeks before the Oklahoma City bombing. If they hadn't done that, if they hadn't called off the ATF from going in there and busting Strassmeyer and others, that probably would have stopped the Oklahoma City bombing in and of itself right then.
And, of course, they specifically intervened so the BATF couldn't go in and get Strassmeyer and disrupt this terrorist center. They were, for all intents and purposes, terrorists. The only trouble is they were also government agents. So you begin to sort of wonder what in heavens is going on? What was the relationship between Strassmeyer and Timothy McVeigh? And, of course, the government sent everything they could to play that part down.
Well, the more time has gone by and over these last several years, the thing that as I continue to analyze this and look at it, as so much information came forth in that Jesse Trinidue case, that's some of the most recent information in the last 6 months, year, on the Oklahoma City case, it's caused me to think back of the letters that Timothy McVeigh used to write to his sister, Jennifer. And there was one letter in particular in which he told her that he and, I think it was six or seven other GIs in his unit at that time were called, were recruited to be a part of, now these are my words, a black ops type of organization within the military.
They were actually, I thought they were special forces, a secret special forces unit involved in illegal activity. Was that somewhat close to what was said?
Yeah, some of the other things that were said was to do drug interdiction, to do assassinations of drug lords or drug kingpins, and other types of similar activities.
So basically what he was saying is, I'm a government agent involved in illegal activity.
Yeah, exactly.
And do you have a copy of that letter?
Yes, I do.
All right, sometime I'd love to see that if you ever find it. And, of course, that was totally suppressed, never mentioned any place. But, of course, how was that brought out? Was that brought out at one of the grand jury hearings or what?
Well, it was reported upon early in some of the mainstream media, but only in, a handful of articles, very briefly.
And, of course, the last thing that anybody is supposed to know is that Timothy McVeigh really didn't drop out of the military. He was always in the military, but playing a part. It's just as Strassmeyer was playing a part, and Reverend Millar was playing a part, and Carol Howe was playing a part, and they were all playing parts. So pick up the story from there.
Well, I think as we look at so many things where the government has lied and they've been caught in just blatant lies about one of the lies was about Carol Howe. When we first started discovering primarily through the work of J.D. Cash, who was a reporter and an investigator who's still involved in the story, has done a lot of good work, as he started writing about Carol Howe, he discovered this undercover agent, undercover source. NBC and ABC started kind of competing with each other, and this was the latter part of 1996 and in the very beginning of 1997, which 97 was the year that McVeigh went on trial in Denver, last day of March in 97. They started racing to see if you could get the story of Carol Howe. Well, they started asking some of the federal prosecutors about Carol Howe, did they know about her? And they said, oh no, we don't know anything about her. She has nothing to do with this case.
And they were lying.
Absolutely lying.
And so that is the most incredible thing. We're going to get back to this story when we return. But Carol Howe was the daughter of a very wealthy couple there in Oklahoma. And they paid for her defense. But the government tried to imprison her, knowing she was innocent as a terrorist. She was working undercover for the BATF. But they couldn't, of course, allow her to come forward and testify at the McVeigh trial. It would have, of course, blown the entire story right open. We'll be right back.
will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, A Route to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today, and unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health, despite their fatty diet, because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules preserved in an airtight capsule just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is former Representative Charles Key from the legislature in Oklahoma, who is willing to take a stand and try to get the truth out about what really happened there in 1995. And, of course, the American people have never been told the truth, because if they ever really learned what happened, why, there would be a total loss of faith in the forces working in Washington, D.C. Well, we were talking about Carol Howe. Do you want to pick up that story? That is indeed an incredible story.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We were talking about Carol Howe and what you just described, how the American people would lose so much faith in the government. That's what they told and pleaded with ABC News when they were running two stories. They ran the first one in January of 97, preceding the McVeigh trial, which talked about Carol Howe a little bit, It had a segment on it in which it had quite a few of the survivors or family members who lost loved ones, like Glenn and Kathy Wilburn and about a dozen other people, approximately, and over their house, and they had them in the in there as a group, and were talking to them, and they were raising questions about the bombing, and telling that they couldn't get answers, et cetera, et cetera. And then they were, again, I mentioned earlier before the break, that they were racing NBC to get this broader, bigger story on Carol Howe. And they had done that, they were going to run it, and the two producers that were here in Oklahoma City that were working with a lot of people, including myself and others, were trying their best to get this story run. Well, in the meantime, Justice Department officials, higher-ups, were calling ABC News higher-ups and pleading with them not to run this other segment, and because they were going to run it on Peter Jennings' regular, you know, evening news. That's how big of a story it was. And they described something to them along the lines of what you just said. They said, if you run this story, the American people are just not going to be able to handle it. It may start causing all kinds of riots, something to that effect. And the two producers, one of them who went to work for us later on after he left ABC News, were just extremely upset, to put it mildly.
But of course, the question is, why can't they tell the American people the truth unless, of course, there are people in government who are responsible for murder?
Yeah, it's not because the American people can't handle this, because they couldn't handle the truth being told about the cover-up and what they've done, because it would mean their jobs.
Well, of course, I think some of them should certainly be sent to prison,
yes,
or even executed for complicity in what they've done. But everything is done to conceal, and attack and vilify anybody who tries to bring out the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, what about Carol Howe? Where does she fit into this, and why is her story so important?
Well, along the way, in my long involvement in this, it was one of the points when they brought charges against her to try to disparage her name.
The government tried to put her in prison, even though she was a patriotic girl who risked her life for America.
Yeah, they were. It really got my attention when I went to not all of her trial, but the last days and several and some of the parts of the trial, when it really came home to me. And here they were bringing the force of the federal government against her with some bogus charges to put her in jail, to take her freedom away, a young lady in her middle 20s, and to ruin her name, which they went a long ways in doing that, just to shut her up.
And in fact, the fact that they would send innocent people to prison, is any man's life or family safe when we have people like that in the Justice Department?
No, not at all. And you know, there's been so much of that revealed over the last decade, approximately, of how many innocent people have been convicted. And our prosecutors, knowing that they were convicting innocent people, or people that didn't deserve to be convicted at minimum, and it should just really wake the American people up.
In fact, I wonder what sort of a lawyer Clark Brewster was. He was the it was Clark Brewster, wasn't it, to Charles?
Yeah.
And I interviewed him, at least talking to him after the trial. He appeared to me to be a very, very excellent lawyer. They needed somebody like that to save her from being sending an innocent woman to prison.
He is. He's not only one of the top lawyers in Oklahoma, but in the United States, and he is an excellent lawyer. And he, if it weren't for her family being able to get someone like Clark Brewster, she may have been convicted.
And I wonder how many innocent people are in prison today, ladies and gentlemen, because the good people of this country do nothing. And it takes trouble and time to ferret things out and try to get to the truth. Well, we'll tell you a lot more when we get back here in just a moment with Representative Charles Key. This incredible story of the cover-up of what really happened in the Murrah Building, and the story of Timothy McVeigh, and how that really all basically ties right back, or forward, I should say, to what happened on Line 11. Is that they lied about Oklahoma City? What are they lying about? About 9/11? What are they lying about? About the real reason we went into Afghanistan? The real reason we went into Iraq? And what the next plans are?
Have you ever wondered what really happened in Oklahoma City? Well, a very important video is the cover-up in Oklahoma City. It really consists of film clips that were actually taken from video footage shot during the first 2 or 3 days after the bombing. And you'll actually hear the commentators in Oklahoma City talking about the second bomb, the third bomb that had been disarmed. Now, if they were actually disarming bombs there, why didn't we hear that throughout the rest of the country? You'll actually hear an interview with one of the gentlemen who was in the Murrah building at the time that the bomb went off, and he had time then to jump underneath his desk before the glass blew in from outside. Obviously, there were two bombs, one inside, one outside. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WARN.
It is vitally important that you help us to get this message out across America, because without knowledge, my people perish.
Sophisticated investors are buying gold and silver today because the dollar has lost almost 50% of its value in relationship to the euro, and the price of gold and silver has increased almost 40%. If you're interested in learning more about precious metal investing, why don't you call Bo at 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177, or visit him at Elliott's Stamp and Coin Shop in downtown Santa Cruz at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building, which is located between Trader Joe's and the Signature Twin Movie Theater. Bo's telephone number is 831-423-0177. That's 831-423-0177. And he's located at 141 South River Street in the San Lorenzo office building. And if you mention you heard about Elliott Stamp and Coin Shop on Radio Liberty, why, you'll get a 15% discount on some non-investment items.
Leading edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this afternoon is former Representative Charles Key, who laid his job on the line when he came out and tried to get the truth about what happened during the Oklahoma City bombing and what was really behind it and who else was involved besides Timothy McVeigh. And, of course, he paid a price for that, because you're not supposed to get the truth out. Well, Representative Key, Charles, really, where do we stand now? Of course, Carol Howe was tried, and she was eventually exonerated, no matter, despite the fact that the government threw everything at her to try to send an innocent woman to prison. That must have sent a certain chill down your back as you were sitting there in the courtroom, knowing that the prosecutors knew she was innocent, but they'd been ordered to convict her.
Well, yes. You wondered what was going to happen. You see the prosecutor and other government officials go up on the witness stand. You see the prosecutor perform in the courtroom, and it's like an acting job. It's kind of like watching a TV show or something. They act like this person is just a terrible person and has committed these terrible crimes, and you don't know what's going to happen. Well, thank God for the jury, and frankly, we found out later that specifically some people on the jury that happened to be knowledgeable about the case, and they were not going to fall for the big dog and pony show that the government was putting on. And it makes you realize that why a lot of people that are innocent or shouldn't be convicted of various crimes, whatever the case may be, from time to time, and a lot of times it's because the jury is ignorant and they're simply putting their faith in those prosecutors, taking essentially the attitude that, well, they wouldn't do anything wrong. You know, they wouldn't go after these people if they didn't deserve it. That kind of thinking. And I think that's how a lot of people get convicted that shouldn't be convicted. But in Carol Howe's case, she was real fortunate. She had a good lawyer, and there were people on that jury, which sometimes that's what a good lawyer will do. He'll make sure you get the right people on the jury so that you can get a fair or fairer verdict than what you otherwise may not get.
Well, I understand she's just disappeared. My understanding was that she didn't want anything. She was so disillusioned by what had happened that she realized she could no longer trust her government.
Yeah, she, you know, when you go through those kind of things, I can certainly relate to that. Like some, you know, we could line people up, as you well know yourself, in the Oklahoma City case. Of so many people that were in the building that almost got killed, were lucky they got out, or they lost loved ones in the building that have gotten involved in this case, or along the way, they realized how big of a cover-up and a crime within the crime itself by the cover-up the government's done, and they've been disillusioned in the same way. And can't believe what their government's done.
Well, do you believe that there were explosive charges, cutting charges planted on the major pillars of that building to bring it down?
Absolutely. You know, the proof of that is the so many of the experts who have spoken to this issue, experts that have given their whole life in design, development, in other words, military people, others in commercial or the private realm that have used ammonium nitrate and many other explosive devices. They know how they work. They know what they will do and what they can't do. And then people like Frederick Whitehurst, who was one of the, if not still yet, the highest-ranked FBI crime lab agent, who came out right along the time of the, right after the Oklahoma City bombing, the time of the Oklahoma City, Tim McVeigh's trial. In 97, and talked about how there was so much corruption going on in the FBI crime lab on many, many, many cases, many high-profile cases and many others that aren't so high-profile. And he spoke specifically to the Oklahoma City case itself.
And basically, the FBI falsified the evidence, didn't they?
They falsified the evidence, and it's not like they had a lot of evidence in the first place either. They really had zero forensic evidence. The only real forensic evidence they had was allegedly, and this is where the falsification comes in, was a very small piece that's smaller than a dime that allegedly shows that there was ammonium nitrate in the Ryder truck. If you think about that, about the size of the end of an eraser on a pencil, allegedly had the components of ammonium nitrate. Well, as Fred Whitehurst has said, that information was false. It wasn't sound in the first place to make the assumption that it was the proper compound.
But, of course, they could have tied Timothy McVeigh to the Ryder truck because they had the videos of him getting out, but they couldn't show that because it would have showed John Doe, too.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest things, you know, like so many cases like this now, when you look at many of them, there's so many just real simple fundamental issues that scream and speak so loudly about the government's cover-up and their unwillingness to let the truth just be known. And that is, one of them is the surveillance videos.
And
at least 22 surveillance videos in that immediate area, including right on the Murr Building, cameras pointing down in the street that would have shown the Ryder truck pulling up, everybody that got out of the truck, all the people in the vehicles around it, which there were other people, would have shown everything. Would have shown the building blowing up so you could see if the Ryder truck and the bomb inside of it did all the damage, could have done all the damage. Surveillance videos across the street, they refused, and they had fought vehemently, you know, in the courts up to this date and time, to keep those from being made public.
And, of course, my understanding is, in fact, I had a friend of mine, you probably remember Alex Magnus, who actually helped finance a case to get it into court to demand those videos be released. This was long after the Timothy McVeigh had been convicted. And the government said, we can't release that. There's an ongoing investigation.
Yeah.
Have you heard that?
Oh, goodness. They've said that so many times. They've said it, and they've said, no, it's not. It's on, it's off, it's on, it's off.
In other words, we're still having an investigation. That's what they say when they don't want to release the videos. And then, of course, they tell everybody else, well, the case is closed. There's nothing more to it.
Yeah. And you know, the other, and Alex Magnus was a great individual, a great patriot. He was tremendous to help us and so many people in this case. And he really went farther than far many people will ever go to sacrifice not only time and money, but many other things.
In fact, they even went after him. They even sued him because he gave some money to a fellow who was writing a book that said something unkind about an FBI agent. So they sued Alex Magnus. They wanted to destroy him. They will destroy anybody who questions the official party line, almost like they would in Russia.
And just for the record, we should say that they sued him, but they were unsuccessful in
right.
that suit.
Thank goodness for that. But, of course, he died shortly thereafter. So
yes. And, you know, another big thing, we're talking about the surveillance videos, is another thing that people should know about the Oklahoma City case is there are 1,034 fingerprints. This is a part of the public record. It was admitted into the trials of McVeigh and Nichols. The total count of fingerprints was 1,034. Fingerprints from McVeigh's car, from the Dreamland Hotel, where he stayed the days before, and there was at least one person, we think maybe two people that were there with him, from the Ryder truck rental place that took the whole counter out to get the fingerprints off it, and many other places. 1,034 fingerprints, and they never ran the fingerprints against their 30-some-odd million database of fingerprints to try to find matches for it.
Well, of course, they didn't want to find matches because they did not want, of course, to have to admit that other people were involved.
Exactly. And that's a tragedy. I mean, you talk about people within the government, within the FBI, the Justice Department, that would be liable to having charges filed against them. They should have for that and keeping the surveillance videos from being made public. And then what does it say to people in Congress and so many others that look the other way and won't get involved in something like this? And this is not the only case. There's so many cases where our public officials, elected and otherwise, are falling down and failing tremendously. And it's a big game that if people knew the truth, they should kick a lot of those people out of office and get somebody else in.
Well, there's a very, very famous MK Ultra psychiatrist who worked for the CIA named Jolly West. And I had heard from several sources that he was down there not once but a number of times visiting Timothy McVeigh. Did you ever hear that story?
Well, we heard the story, but that's one of the stories that is really difficult to get any information about simply because, you know, when he visited McVeigh, McVeigh was incarcerated in the federal penitentiary in El Reno, Oklahoma, which is just about 30 miles west of Oklahoma City, right here where I live, where I'm speaking to you from right now. And so it's hard to get facts about that. I think the only thing that exists is a newspaper account of his visit. And I think that's all there is.
I actually talked to a gentleman who wrote a number of letters to him. He told me that, you know, he developed some sort of a friendship with him. And he at least told me that Timothy didn't want to see Jolly West, but he was, of course, allowed in by the government. Of course, the question is, why would a CIA psychiatrist who was involved with MKUltra mind control be going to visit Tim McVeigh? It's a lot of unanswered questions, aren't there?
Well, you know, Tim McVeigh's closest friend and family member said that as time went by, he started acting different. And so, you know, it fuels speculation about, again, the visit of this Jolly West, who was the psychiatrist, why he was there, what he was doing, and that's one thing we may never know about.
I'm sure there are a lot of unanswered questions. What about the Philippine connection? Did you ever get into that? Timothy McVeigh being over in the Philippines meeting with some questionable people?
Well, yeah, we did, and that's one of the more trickier questions to address. Also, it makes it a little bit harder because it's so far away to determine just who's telling the truth there, but not only did a lot of people look into that, but probably Stephen Jones, the attorney for Tim McVeigh, was the one that dug into it more than anyone else. And there are a lot of people that are convinced that Terry Nichols in his trips over to the Philippines, you know, he ended up marrying a Filipino lady, that he met with some Middle Eastern terrorists over there.
In fact, the names, of course, of Ramzi Yosef and Murad and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, this may be all this information they're putting out to really throw us off the track. Have you ever thought of that, that they're feeding us faulty information to confuse us?
Yeah, I have thought about that, and one reason that I think it's valid to seriously consider that is, as I've looked into this case, met so many people, I've met the Terry Nichols family, and I know that a lot of people have an emotional knee-jerk reaction that, you know, somehow you have to hate the family or something, or feel some kind of negative feelings towards them, but I have to say that the Nichols family are really super nice people, and they're just like people you'd find anywhere. We're a very good family. And what I've learned about them and about Terry Nichols, it makes it kind of hard for me to believe that he was that deeply involved in it. Again, if he was, I certainly would like to know why our government didn't pursue it and include it in charges and pursue those other individuals that were involved. You know, there's something not right about all that.
And of course, recently there was a story that he was trying to name somebody else who had actually had given them some explosives that he felt was a dual agent, who was this arms fellow they supposedly stole the guns from.
Roger Moore, who right. most certainly was another, you know, whatever you want to call him, undercover agent, agent provocateur.
Now, isn't that what Terry Nichols was trying to say?
Yeah, Terry Nichols was trying to say that Roger Moore was one that had provided some materials to him and I guess others, and that his fingerprints were on these materials, and that it would clearly show his complicity in the case. In other words, you know, again, it's kind of like Andy Strassmeyer, again, we were talking about earlier. You have an agent that's out there encouraging you to do things and even providing materials for you to do things that would be otherwise illegal. We probably won't know the rest of that story either, but Roger Moore has a very shady background, goes way back, being involved in, formerly had a boat business, like these big speedboats in Florida, and some have suggested that he might have been involved with the CIA and maybe even drug running or, you know, something along the lines of that when he had a lot of activity in Florida.
Well, we're sort of getting out of time. First of all, you came out with a report. Are copies of that report still available?
Yeah, they're still available. We have to go to our website to order a copy of it. The website is OKCbombing.org. And they can order online or inquire otherwise by email.
OKCbombing.org. I've got a copy of it. I think it's a very, very important document. You'll see some. You did a tremendous amount of work to put that all together, and you had quite a few impediments, didn't you? People that made off with a lot of your information.
Yeah, we had some. we had some people that either they were thinking they were going to make a lot of money on this deal, or maybe they were working for the other side. People have their different theories, and I don't know what's true, but I just know that. Yeah, we had some people that came along that thought they were going to write their own book and make a lot of money, and that's what their interests were. Or maybe they were there in the first place to just cause problems for us. But, yeah, we had our own problems along the way.
In fact, I know, of course, a number of people in the conservative movement, and almost anybody who's effective usually is infiltrated and disrupted in one way or another. I can think of at least half a dozen times I've seen that story enacted over and over again. And that's why I'm always very careful in who we have around and working with us here.
As you know, as our group, and you know most of those people, a lot of them have interviewed other ones.
Right.
As we've gone along, you know, we've looked at it and analyzed it, and, you know, talked about it, revisited it, and we feel like, you know, we've been blessed by God just to get through it, but also to be able to accomplish what we accomplished in spite of all of these problems that cropped up. And you know, we're just talking about one kind of category of problems that cropped up there. We had problems with our own government officials here in Oklahoma City that tried to indict me a couple of times.
Right. And they'll go after anybody who tries to get out the truth.
Yeah, and I was blessed with yet another, what's called in Oklahoma, multi-county grand jury that wouldn't go along with one prosecutor, our state attorney general, who was trying to get bogus charges brought up against me, and they wouldn't have anything to do with it.
I think you're lucky you have a lot of good down-to-earth people there in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Well, look, we're just about out of time. Let's get that telephone number off one more time. And is there a website at all people can go to?
Yeah, it's OKCbombing.org.
All right. And what about, is it a telephone number they can call or not?
No, we don't have a telephone number anymore. They could call my, I would give out mine, I've done this before, give out my business phone number. It's not a toll-free number. And that number is 405-470-1231. You know, I still know that from time to time there are people that have information out there. I had somebody just call me last week and had some very important information. And there may be somebody listening to this program that has some legitimate, very good information. Occasionally, over the years, we've heard from former agents that have given us information.
Hey, we're out of time. God bless. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Look forward to having you back again.
Bye.
Our 4-tape set on the JFK assassination includes an interview with Lee Harvey Oswald. Of course, it's not an interview that I did, but it is an interview, and you'll actually hear Lee Harvey Oswald talking before the time of the assassination. A 2-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of an American president. And then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this 4-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes.
When was the last time you used Pure Soap? I mean real, hard-to-find, all-natural Pure Soap that contains no dyes, perfumes, deodorants, or antibacterials. Probably never, right? Hey, folks, Michael Trudeau here, and I want to tell you about my friend Marty. He's the owner and founder of the Calben Soap Company. For the past 55 years, the Calben Soap Company's been making triple-concentrated Pure Soaps exclusively for healthcare professionals and hospitals. Now, for the first time, Calben Pure Soap is available factory-direct to you and your family. Calben Pure Soap is made from all natural ingredients. It's earth-friendly and it's safe. Call the Calben Soap Company today toll-free at 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091. Save up to 85% off supermarket and retail store prices. Visit them on the web at calbenpuresoap.com or call for information at 1-800-340-7091. That web address again is calbenpuresoap.com. Try Pure Soap once, and I guarantee you'll never use anything else.
You know, when I was growing up, my parents weren't worried about our education. We were taught the basics of math and English, science and history, the joy of art and music, and the need for sports. And our generation turned out leaders in every field. But as a parent today, I am concerned with my child's education. That's why I chose VHM Christian School. I know that at VHM, my children are getting a quality education with a biblical foundation. I'm not worried whether they'll be prepared. I know they are. VHM gives my children the tools to succeed and instills moral values. There are so many issues for me to be concerned about. I'm glad my children's education is not one of them. Won't you call VHM today? Your child is worth it. Call 475-4762. That's VHM Christian School at 475-4762.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty really is primarily supported by people out there across America who believe in what we're doing and help us finance our ministry. We're 5 hours every weekday, and then on the weekends, we reach out across America trying to get the information out that you're not going to get through regular channels. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, as much as you can afford, why, you'll get our 4 best tapes of the month, but mostly you'll be helping us do what we do, and that is try to explain to people what's really going on. Now, we do have an excellent four-tape set on the Oklahoma City bombing, our initial four-tape set, and then we have an Oklahoma City bombing update. And you'll hear my interview with Clark Brewster, who was Carol Howe's attorney, as he goes into the fact that, of course, the man who ran Elohim City, this violent, vicious, anti-Semitic, anti-American organization, was really an FBI agent. And then, of course, how the government tried to send Carol Howe to prison. Great Brewster. Great interview. I don't know any other interviews with Clark Brewster. We have two four-tape sets, and that is, of course, in the second four-tape set. We have two videos on Oklahoma City, and, of course, one of them is the cover-up in Oklahoma City. And you can get them separately, or you can get them all together as the Oklahoma City special. We recommend that. You really need to understand Oklahoma City to understand what happened on 9/11. And, of course, we're going to war sooner or later with Syria and Iran. It's only a matter of time, and America is going to be plunged into World War III, because that is the master plan. And I've actually heard William Crystal on Nightline with Ted Koppel talking about that and laying out the plan, and we cover that in some of our newsletters, and actually you can get those newsletters. They're put together into three 50-page booklets. Each one's only $3.95. You can get, they're called Foreknowledge 9/11 Part 1, Foreknowledge 9/11 Part 2, Foreknowledge 9/11 Part 3, and you can get all three of them for only $9.95 plus shipping. We hope you wanted to get that. If you want to understand what lies ahead, you need, of course, to get our video, Iraq, the Untold Story, and then you need to get the syllabus goes with it, because we give you the information that's put out by the people in the Project for the New American Century, a small clique that seized control of our government. And the organization, you can go to their website, newamericancentury.org. newamericancentury.org, read what they say, or of course you can get that in our syllabus as well. Get the information. Get involved. Because if you don't, who will? And if not now, when? Remember, we are having a all-day seminar here on the 19th of November at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. We hope you can come. Lunch is going to be served. You have to have reservations. So give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you're a shortwave listener, as of the 31st of this month, the 30th of October, the evening frequency changes from 7.465 to 7.490. And the afternoon changes to 7.490. Other evening channel, it would be 5.835. So there's two channels, 5.835 and 7.490 in the evening after October 30th, and then 7.490 in the afternoon. We ask you to tell others about our programs. And then, of course, we mentioned we do carry the Big Berkey products, and if you live in an area with fluoridated water, why, you certainly want to be able to get it out, and I don't know any other really effective way to get the fluoride out of your water, because they're poisoning our children. And if you need more information on that, you can go to our website at radioliberty.com and pull down my newsletters on water fluoridation. Check out the facts. Go up on the Internet. It's there. There's fluoridealert.org is a great website. The ADA put up one just like it, fluoridealert.com, to confuse people, because everything's perception. And, of course, we've got real problems in America. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until Monday, we'll be back with you once again. May the Lord be with you.